It's 22:30 Coordinated Universal Time. Stay tuned for the international rebroadcast of The Great Eastern, Newfoundland's cultural magazine with Paul Moth. You are listening to the Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland, 520 on the long wave. This week on The Great Eastern.
It's a postmodernist mystery extravaganza.
Controlling a population with carefully designed propaganda originating with the party organization.
It's another fascist free trade hallucination.
Point, point, point!
Bonjour, Canada. Hello. Gonna die in Iceland? Come on aboard. My name is Paul Moth. On today's show, a nation pays tribute to one honorable son. A slick, leathery gauntlet is thrown down before Canada's national ragmeisters. And ancient Irish myths are recast and dismissed. All this for you with me on The Great Eastern, Newfoundland's cultural magazine.
All day Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of this week, the populace of St. John's paraded through the BCN building on Duckworth Street. Studio J, the gigantic soundstage normally home to our regular dramatic series playlets, had been transformed into a waking room for Sir Freeman Crotty. Of course, I was there, clad in my charcoal two-piece with the Newfoundland tartan bow tie. Here in Studio J, Sir Freeman Crotty, former Commissioner of Broadcasting in Newfoundland, lies in state. Thousands of people have paid their final respects to this legendary government official, and still the queue trails through our building and out onto Duckworth Street. Dignitaries and ne'er-do-wells rub shoulders in their desire to honor this man. It's quite a sight once you get in here. Sir Freeman's casket is center stage, resting, it seems, in a nest of microphone cables and boom stands, the workings of his radio world. Sir Freeman was Grand Vizier of the Conquerbell Lodge, a Knight Templar, a big wheel with the Friends of India, several times President of the Real Porcelain Association, and, of course, a breeder of trans-pennine Balinese cats. So it's quite a mix in here. Ah, here they come now. The Conquerbell Lodge emerging from a cloud of their pungent and strangely affecting incense filling this temple of the long wave. They are led by the Capelin Mazer with his great swaying conical hat. The Conquerbells mute in honor of Sir Freeman. The masked choir and band is now circling the remains, swirling their burbling censers and showering Sir Freeman with petals. Dancing and swaying, the bladders of their cramp woozers pumping in their arms. Oh my, and the incense thicker still, and the ceiling opening up, vast luminous ribbons of revelation spilling through. They're receding now, the Conquerbell Lodge. The air clearing. Always a powerful ceremony. And here now come the Real Porcelain Association in their sensible shoes and blazers. Perhaps we should move on. And here is Ari Oldmanis, BCN's Director of Engineering Emeritus, and one of Sir Freeman Crotty's longest associates.
A sad occasion, Paul Moss, host of the Great Eastern.
Ari, you first met Sir Freeman while he was traveling through Europe, is that right?
Yes, it was in the old country, 1932, around this time of year, actually, during Oktoberfest. Bormann and I were having
Oktoberfest? In your native Latvia?
Yes, Oktoberfest in beautiful Latvia. The great tankards of Latvian lager and Riga sausage, it was wonderful. But enough of our first meeting. Sir Freeman, you know, Paul, was a true pioneer of public radio, ensuring the state had a place in the media, controlling a population with carefully designed propaganda originating with the party organization. Alas, the one-party stage fell out of favor in the late 40s, but Sir Freeman did the best he could under the circumstances, I think.
Our old man, thanks for sharing with us. Joining me now is Morris Gesso, funeral director of this event and host of BCN's most popular show, Interred. It's a weekly program dedicated to issues of death and dying. Morris?
Hello, Paul.
I understand that you and your brother, Horace, embalmed the commissioner.
Yes, that's right. Horace still works the cauldron at the family business, but I hadn't donned the cotton and the latex in some years.
Well, Morris, you've done incredible work.
Thank you.
The commissioner looks better than he has in years, seeming refreshed, like he just got out of the shower.
Yes, and the blush of an autumn walk in his cheeks.
But not pasty or oily. The makeup is very discreet, and his expression...
Yes. We wanted to achieve a look of serenity, something that would befit a gentleman of Sir Freeman's station. And, you know, a smile or a grin would be very disconcerting. I was afraid this might happen. Lloyd Duncan.
Captain Lloyd Duncan? He had that old kid show, didn't he? Salty Tales.
Yes.
What's the story there, Morris?
Well, I think Canadian regulators made Sir Freeman take Lloyd Duncan off the air.
Yeah.
They said he was frightening children. And Lloyd, who was a real sea captain, actually, he felt betrayed by Freeman.
And that explains his bitter 46-year alcoholic funk.
I said I'd bury you, cruddy. Parson!
Oh, Erling Biggs is stepping in. God, that's gotta hurt.
Captain Lloyd's quick with the peg leg. I'd best see to this, Paul.
Watch yourself, Morris.
Get your clammy hands off me, you old pansy, Jessel.
Oh, look at that. Morris has got a stun gun. This is shaping up to be a real wake. Ben Trovato there, and Ishlundrigan, our director of radio, they're now dragging Lloyd Duncan off the casket and out through the doors. Well, Morris, a stun gun.
Yes, this device, oh, mercy. This device saved my life at a wake on the southern shore one night. You know, emotions tend to run high at these events. There's drinking and...
It's very stressful.
Yes. Well, you'll have to excuse me, Paul, but Knights Templar business.
Of course. Morris Gesso, host of Interred.
My time in the presence was then over. Representatives of all the major and minor radio and television broadcasters had paid their last respects to Sir Freeman. Even the head of the local cable monopoly attended. The ceremonies continued around the clock. A memorial service for Sir Freeman was held on Wednesday afternoon preceding his cremation. Apparently, some of his ashes will be sprinkled over the Hindu Kush, an area Sir Freeman explored as a youth, while the remainder will go to the local chapter of the Knights Templar for education. Sir Freeman Alderdice Crotty, dead at 87. For a wonderful tribute to the man, set your web browser to our homepage at greateastern.cbc.ca. Time for a visit from popular author and critic Kathleen Hanrahan with another installment of WordWorks, our look at literary goings-on. So good to see you again, Kathleen.
Thanks, Paul. Wasn't that a wonderful memorial service for Sir Freeman? Oh, he was such a nice man.
He was. But life goes on. What's on display in the new release section this week?
Today, Paul, we have a couple of exciting mysteries.
Ah, Sleuths, Dicks, and Gumshoes. Great. I love a good whodunit.
Well, then you're definitely going to get a kick out of Oriental Dolphin Farewell Spy by hot young local scribbler Marie Squires.
Well, do tell.
It's a postmodernist mystery extravaganza.
Pomo? How so?
Oriental Dolphin Farewell Spy is a self-conscious pastiche of elements from all different mystery styles.
Got them. Meerschaums and Deerstalkers.
By the Apple.
Chandler-esque meta-hyperbole.
Paved thick and hot on every steaming page.
Willowy babes with open secrets.
Half crazy and trying to escape daddy's millions, but not too hard.
I like it already. Who's the detective?
Sammy Jane Marlowski, mm-hmm. A transsexual ex-nun, deep cover insurance investigator with a war-shattered psyche from service in Laos and El Salvador.
Ah, intriguing.
5 feet and 10 inches of tough dick. A sexual appetite that's voracious, yet sinister. perfectly romantic, and no slouch with the Shakespearean quips either, especially over a double Chateau Lafitte and Mahjong.
Wow. The mystery?
Her offbeat neighbor, a good-hearted junkie art forger, is mistaken for the inventor of a new death chip by the Japanese mob. Mm. And before they can get to him, a serial killer working in the neighborhood ends up drowned in Merlowski's jacuzzi, and her neighbor is nowhere to be found.
Probably right under her nose.
Merlowski teams up with a vacationing Interpol super cop, Sir Nero Magro Holmes Smiley, and his punk-bi forensic pathologist daughter, and before you can say elementary, they're embroiled in the deadly global labyrinth of blood, sex, and betrayal that is Microsoft International.
Oh, now that's a plot. You're not going to give away the ending, I hope.
Oh, I couldn't anyway. It ends every possible way.
Oh, fantastic.
And listeners will be happy to know that Oriental Dolphin Farewell Spy is going to be dramatized on BCN's Playlist starting in the new year.
A bit of luck there for Miss Squires.
I suppose.
Oh, yes. Radio rights are where the real cake is, Kathleen. My book, The Rocky Road to Recovery?
Yes.
When they dramatized that on Playlist, I got $1,000.
$1,000?
That's right. $1,000.
Is that so?
Indeed it is so. That's Oriental Dolphin Farewell Spy by Marie Squires. Mystery number two?
This one is a real mystery. The Druid's Portent by Anne Barry.
Not the mystical Irish artifact thing, is it?
That's right. The Shalagraha Amulet.
Not again.
It's an important part of ancient Celtic lore,
okay,
Paul.
Okay, I'm sorry, Kathleen. Tell us all about the amulet.
Well, it was inscribed with a message of enormous portent that could solve the world's problems.
Yeah, it was allegedly left in Newfoundland by the Irish monks on their alleged 9th century voyage.
Right. Now, as soon as Barry began her search for the missing amulet, all kinds of odd things started happening to her.
Strange, short-statured people began following her, and documents started disappearing.
Finally, a secret note directed her to a cave near Lameline, where an old goat herd led her to a hidden shrine.
Let me guess, the Shalagraha amulet was there.
It was. And she was able to read the first part of the inscription. Once enough people begin asking the same question, life will change.
Yeah, I know. And before she could read the rest of the message and find out what the magic question was, a leprechaun from the Knights of Columbus boinked her on the head with his shillelagh, and when she came to, the amulet was gone.
Well, you're obviously not a believer.
Look, Kathleen, all right, I'll come right out and say it. I've seen the Shalagraha amulet.
What? You have?
Yes, yes, I have seen the Shalagraha amulet.
Where?
My grandmother Byrne had it over her mantle.
Oh, Paul, surely...
How many hours did I spend listening to Nana Byrne yabber on about the magical powers of the friggin' Shalagraha amulet and the ancient wisdom of the Druids? Let me assure you, it has no magic powers whatsoever, and there's no magic question of world.
So what does the inscription say?
If my Gaelic serves me correctly, something about the limits of conduct befitting a shepherd in County Connaught.
What happened to it? Why didn't you keep it?
Oh, Dad gave it away to the St. Finian Society for some sort of Provo fundraiser, I think.
Well, despite your skepticism, Paul, The Druid's Portent has become a huge bestseller.
Is there no limit to the amount of mystical mumbo-jumbo people are prepared to fork into their bewildered, gaping maws?
Nope, and there's no limit.
Remember pyramid power?
And crystals.
Distinct society. Thanks as always, Kathleen Hanrahan.
Always a pleasure. See you again soon, Paul.
And for those listeners who somehow have managed to miss the huge promotional push for Kathleen's new show, Her Nibs airs Sunday nights at 8, right here on the BCN.
Kids!
Oh, what a lot.
Come on up Gander Bay Way. Come on up to Uncle Jack's Shack.
Come on, Esau. Give your Uncle Jack a kidney.
It's fun for the whole family.
If that's his liver, then what's this?
The fur's flying, and Warden Coombs is in hot pursuit.
It's no use, Jack. We know what you're doing in there.
Uh-oh.
Every Saturday at 1, Uncle Jack's Shack, only on BCN.
Shut the doors and lower the windows. Take the kettle off the hob and unplug the vacuum cleaner. Turn off the car engine and turn up the radio, Canada and Iceland. It's time for What's That Noise from Newfoundland? And we've been getting guesses from all over the world. I believe that RCI satellite thing really works. Anyway, Hollis Duffett, custodian of all things sonic, give us a blast of that sound. Undeniable. That is definitely a noise from Newfoundland. Down into the bulging bag of postcards, emails, and mysterious packages I go in hope of retrieving an entry that nails the sound. And here's an envelope from all the way from Nova Scotia, Canada's ocean playground. It's written on a piece of newspaper. Seems that anything to hand when the muse strikes, I suppose. Anyway, this is from John Archibald of Bridgewater in our sister province to the west. John writes, to Great Eastern, answer, balloon burner, balloon festival in Gander, summer 97. Hollis, adjudicator of such matters? Hey, yes, we have a winner. John Archibald of Nova Scotia, you have correctly identified our mystery sound. How did you do that? It is indeed the audio of a hot air balloon being inflated at the Gander Balloon Festival this past summer. That's a good tip for you if you're a first-time player of the What's That Noise game. We do require a relatively exact response. Balloon burner, say, or gander, could have been deemed incorrect. At the absolutely arbitrary decision of Hollis Duffett, of course. But John Archibald of Bridgewater, your Great Eastern tea is almost in the mail. Long-time listeners will know that on the occasions when the guess is guessed, we just whip out another one. Get your pencil and paper ready. I'll give you our address in a moment. But first, there have been some complaints around the studios here that the last noise was just a little bit too easy. So prepare yourselves for a monster of a Newfoundland noise. Hollis Duffett, inform the world. There you go. If you think you know what the new noise is, write us at What's That Noise from Newfoundland. Care of the BCN, 342 Duckworth Street, St. John's, Newfoundland, A1C1H5. Or you can email your entry in. Our electronic address is greateastern@stjohns.cbc.ca. You know, we used to hear Portuguese around St. John's all the time, but it's been about 15 years since the Gui tongue has graced our shores. Well, let's change that right now. Here is Tete Vocal with Canisa Amarela.
Encontrei o meu pedaço na avenida de camisa amarela, cantando a flor e bela, oh, ah, e a flor e bela. Convidei-o a voltar para casa em sua companhia, exibiu-me um sorriso ironia e desapareceu no turbilhão das avenidas. Estava nada bom, o meu pedaço na verdade estava bem mamado, bem chovado a atravessar. Foi por aí cambaleando, se safando num cordão, corre, corre, corre na mão.
Mais tarde encontrei no café
Surrafa do Largo da Lapa, União da Roça, bebendo quinto copo de cachaça. E Surrafa é xaloça. Voltou às 7 horas da manhã, mas só na quarta-feira, cantando a jardineira, oh, ai, a jardineira. Me pediu ainda só um copo d'água com bicarbonato. Meu pedaço estava azul de mar, depois caiu na cama e não tirou nem o sapato. Ele roubou uma semana, despertou um mal-humorado, quis brigar comigo, que perigo mais bonito. O meu pedaço me ilumina, me fascina, é o tal, por isso não levo a mal.
Pegou a camisa amarela,
camisa e botou fogo nela. Gosto dela assim, acabando a brincadeira, ela sofre para mim, meu senhor do bom fim.
Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da
the death of Sir Freeman Crotty has focused public attention on the little-understood office of Commissioner of Broadcasting. To provide us a clearer picture of its role, we have reached Dr. John Lake, a media sociologist at Memorial University's Center for Post-Diluvian Research. He joins us on the phone from his office.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. Yeah, just closing the door there, okay. Paul.
Professor Lake, sum up for us, if you could, the legacy of Sir Freeman Crotty's long tenure as Newfoundland's Commissioner of Broadcasting.
Well, what you said at the end of your show last week about Sir Freeman's informal policy of non-involvement was very eloquent, but totally wrong. Mm-hmm. See, the sense that he did nothing, that was something that Crotty cultivated.
You think?
Yeah.
Well, I met the man on many occasions, and I never once saw him do anything outside of doffing his Homburg, which he did with great panache.
Yeah, well, you know, Freeman Crotty was the great stupefier, and all his nods and nothings were an act to numb us into thinking that the role of commissioner was benign, just some harmless patronage post.
Well, he certainly succeeded in stupefying
me. In fact,
me.
If you look at the Newfoundland Broadcasting Act of 1935, the powers of the commissioner are total.
Are total, but surely that changed with Confederation.
No. The Act was written into Section 31A, 49GB for the terms of union with Canada. The Commissioner retained his powers, see? But
didn't that create conflicting jurisdictions? Dr. Lake?
Did you hear that? I thought I heard someone. Sorry.
No.
What was the question?
I said, didn't the fact that the powers of the Newfoundland Commissioner were retained in the terms of Confederation create a conflict of jurisdictions?
Oh, yeah. The Canadian regulators went berserk. And, of course, the CBC insisted that the BCN be absorbed into its system.
Well, thank God that was averted.
The big thing was that NBC, CBS, all the big American stations filed for broadcast licenses in Newfoundland that would have given them unregulated access to the Canadian market. Also, Radio France, Radio Pravda, and others.
You mean these foreign stations could have just set up here with the blessing of the Newfoundland Commissioner,
yeah,
and then broadcast throughout Canada without any restrictions?
You're getting the picture.
Wow, that would have changed everything.
Everything.
So why didn't it happen?
On the night of June 3rd, 1950, Crotty had a secret meeting with Canadian officials. That night, the night of the long waves, as Crotty liked to call it, he agreed to liquidate the foreign license applications in return for a guarantee of the BCN's continued existence, as well as an unrestricted radio and TV license for his godson, Aaron Zagner, and cash payments of an undisclosed amount. And then a 47-year veil of stupor.
Did you just hear a clicking, Dr. Lake?
No.
So you think the selection of a new commissioner, then, is of some importance?
Everything's in play, Paul. The stakes are extremely high. Suddenly, everyone's realized that constitutionally, the commissioner's powers over broadcasting are absolute, so all parties are scrambling to have a loyal flunky appointed to the role.
How might the BCN be affected by all this?
Well, things could be dicey unless a friendly is appointed. The commissioner could authorize government expropriation of some or all of the BCN budget, get involved in day-to-day operational decisions. The commissioner even has blanket powers of arrest.
Powers of arrest? That's not good.
Yeah, and you can bet a new commissioner will be chosen after the most disgraceful kind of horse trading in the shadowy backrooms of power by an uncaring kleptocracy bent on destroying culture and civilized... Hey, who the hell are you?
Well, definitely some things to think about there. Thank you, Jonathan Lake, for filling us in. Dr. Lake? We seem to have lost our connection with Dr. John Lake, who is a media sociologist in St. John's.
Serving the island for over 60 years, BCN, the Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland.
Things have heated up on the civics front, so we have convened our panel on political culture after only 2 weeks. With me in the studio, host of BCN's own show trial, Ariel Flint.
Hi, Paul.
And pollster, pundit, and new NAFO appointee, Richard Kandau.
Bo tarde.
And joining us on the line from Argentia is Val Manis, chair of political economy at the University of Newfoundland at St. John's, Carl Johnson, I take it then, Ariel, from your response that you are not a fan of the North Atlantic Fisheries Organization?
The Cosa Nostra of the high seas? High-tech pirates?
Hey, last time I checked, Ariel, Europe had a fair chunk of the Atlantic seaboard.
And so have the right to plunder the last few fish on the Grand Banks of Newfoundland?
Yes.
I should explain that NAFO, or the North Atlantic Fisheries Organization, is a self-policing harvesting structure run, essentially, by the continent that gave us two world wars.
And the third war has already started. It's a war on the environment.
Oh, here she goes!
And the stewards of the North Atlantic fish stocks are war criminals.
David Anderson is a war criminal. Art May is a war criminal. Radovan Karadzic is a war criminal. Everybody's a war criminal. Need I remind you, Ariel, that Canada is getting 97% of the quota?
Well, so there we are. I mean, if we're destroying our own stock.
Here, here, here.
Have you ever had a fish witch?
Moving along then, a series of editorials in the Globe and Mail recently called for the elimination of minimum wage to allow for more low-paying jobs. What are we to make of this?
It's another fascist free trade hallucination.
Point, point, point!
I challenge the editor of the Globe and Mail, William Thorsell, to come down here and live off minimum wage for just 1 week.
Yeah, I don't know how people do it. Of course, where I make almost twice minimum wage is not really my issue.
Boring!
I would like to see any one of those gutless wonders on the Globe editorial board survive on just $200 a week.
Well, I'd certainly act as an impartial observer and make sure that Thorsell didn't sneak off with his credit card and acquire protein.
Let me tell you something, Ms. Flint. The editors of the Globe and Mail may be right-wing lunatics, but they have integrity. They will not shirk this challenge. They aren't afraid of you. They aren't cowards. They're not yellow.
They won't show up.
They will.
I doubt it.
And I'll tell you something else, Mrs. Honorary Pocahontas of the Innu. They'll give you a piece of their minds over these unconscionable delays at Voisey's Bay.
Why me?
Because you've used your publicly funded program to support the propositions that mining is somehow bad for the environment and that there are Aboriginal people living in Labrador.
There are Aboriginal people living in Labrador.
There are not.
Oh, gee, Richard.
Okay, maybe there's a few.
Besides, if unconscionable use of the media is at issue, perhaps you should be the one answering questions.
Oh, listen. I'm paid by big business to stir up anti-environmentalist, anti-native sentiments.
And, Ariel, they're getting value for their money because people are blaming the Innu and environmental concerns for joblessness here in Newfoundland.
That's another thing. We've got to move quickly on this. That nickel's not going to be there forever.
Oh, yeah? Is it going to go bad?
Well, it could go bad, yeah.
Really? I think the plate in my head's got nickel in it. Anyway, moving on, we are obliged to talk about Canadian unity, something to do with our license to broadcast in the continental area. The English-speaking premiers have made a new offer to Quebec, blah, 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 blah.
If I could just speak to that.
Well, I have no respect whatsoever for the Gang of Nine. I have to admit, they are trying.
Oh, no. The offer stank. No wonder Lucien is cracking up.
Oh, yeah. What would you have offered, Quebec, J.R.?
Me? A case of Pepsi and a dime of black ash?
We are out of time. I've just been notified. I want to thank Ariel Flint and J. Richard Kandow for joining me here in the studio. And Carl Johnson on the line from Argentia.
Adios.
Bye, Paul.
We'll see you all again soon. Great Eastern weighs anchor for another week, having been broadcast live to you from St. John's. Our engineer is Hollis Duffus. The director of radio at the BCN is Ish Lundrigan. Our mail address is 342 Duckwith Street, St. John's, Newfoundland, A1C1H5. Or you can e-us at greateastern@stjohns.cbc.ca. You can see our worldwide web offering in the arts section of www.radio.cbc.ca. The Great Eastern is rebroadcast on Radio 2 of the CBC service on Saturday evenings. My name is Paul Moth, Champs Sedna. Join me again next Saturday for The Great Eastern, Newfoundland's cultural magazine.